my fellow travelers, and welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm still your host, Elle Ariel, and we can still be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're on all the streaming platforms. We're on Google Play and iTunes and Stitcher and Android and SoundCloud, and soon to be on YouTube whenever I get my shit together and actually upload the episodes onto YouTube. But literally, there's no way to miss us, so I hope that you are enjoying the previous episodes. We're also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, so just at Music Jobs Podcast, basically. Just look for that or Google that, and you should be able to find us. And obviously, if you want to reach out and tell me what you think, good, bad, or otherwise, you can reach me at info@musicjobspodcast.com. On with the show. So last week we had an amazing guest, G. Scott, who is a dancer choreographer, and he has danced and or choreographed for Mariah Carey, Britney Spears, Fifth Harmony, and Beyonce. Just an incredible man, incredible interview, and he's teaching all over LA. So if any of you either get to LA or live in LA, I urge you to check him out. You can find him on his Facebook page, G.E.E. Scott. And he has all the information on classes that he offers. It's just an amazing man and amazing energy, and it's infectious and just makes you feel good. So go check him out if you haven't already. So our guest this week is Louis Tanguay. Louis is the creator and founder of Section 3 Music Magazine, which in the 90s was both a physical magazine as well as one of the first global online music publication brands. His first big interview was the epic rock band Faith No More. He went on to interview Weezer, Gwen Stefani, Veruca Salt, Method Man, and a whole bunch of other very cool artists. He also branched out into entertainment, interviewing celebrities of TV and film. He decided to fold the magazine in early 2000s, move out to LA, working for several film companies until he started his own business, Circle Marketing, which is a full-service marketing company in Los Angeles, which specializes in small business marketing strategy, advertising, content marketing, and so much more. So not only will we get tales of interviewing rock stars, but also some really, really good marketing and advertising strategy for the artist, the musician just coming up in the world, the indie artist, the DIY musician, how to make the most of those Facebook ads, what tracking codes is all about, and so much more. So since Louis' first band interview was Faith No More, I thought, what is a better way to introduce him than Epic by the epic Faith No More? Here it is. Welcome to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Awesome. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You should be.
Yeah.
So I always love to make people tell me about their childhood. So tell me about what type of childhood you experienced growing up. In what household did people play music in your household? What's like the first record you remember hearing? That kind of thing.
My favorite band when I was a kid was Kiss.
Nice.
And I think that's because, you know, that was a kid and they wore makeup and they played rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get any of the innuendos of the music. It's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Then the first record that I ever owned was Another One Bites the Dust, 45 by Queen.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
Another One Bites the Dust. Hey! And, and then I started becoming a musician because I wanted to, quote unquote,
get the ladies.
Yeah, I was get chicks. But then I started becoming a musician because I wanted to be more popular with the women at the time.
Nice.
So I figured I'd play guitar because that either did that or sang, and I never sang because I'm a little soft-spoken. So I played guitar. But then my problem with that is that I'm so obsessive about being the best that all I did is play guitar and not actually use it to get girls.
So wait, did anyone in your household already play an instrument, or was it just you out of the blue, you just decided this is what I want to do.
Yeah, no, I've
any
always
friends
been,
or somebody that turned you on to a teacher or?
No, I've always been artistic. Mm-hmm. So like I've been a writer since like six. So I've always been writing, and then I just always been artistical. Mm-hmm. So then I said, oh, I like this music. I'm into music. So let me play it. You know, anything I'm into, I just want to do it.
Did you take lessons?
Actually, no. I was self-taught. I did take a few lessons, but they were boring. Like, I'm not really structured. So I always wanted to just write my own music. So the second I would try to make take a lesson, I wouldn't... I'd be bored trying to play other people's songs. So the second I bought a guitar, the first day I went home and started trying to write songs very horribly. But I still, like, always wanted to do my own stuff.
Right, right. That's cool. So in high school, there did you do, like, band? Or did you join a band or make a band or anything like that?
In high school is when I actually learned someone else's song for the first time. And it was... I entered a talent contest, you know, the school talent. Mm-hmm. It was myself and this protege of mine, because I used to teach guitar to younger kids and to my complementaries or whatever. My
contemporaries.
Yeah, that shit. So I used to teach guitar to younger kids and my contemporaries.
Uh-huh.
Ding. And so the first thing that we did is we did this kind of compilation song. It was started off as we did this song called Ear by Jason Becker, I believe is his name. And it was a guitar instrumental that had two guitar parts.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, since I arranged it for both of us, I took all the cooler guitar parts for myself. But he was happy because he was really awesome. I always say he would have been as my friend Elvin. Elvin Rodriguez, if you're out there, shout out. You could have been the best musician ever, the best guitarist ever, but then you quit to be cool. So there you go. So, yeah, we came in second.
Nice. And this was like a mashup?
Yeah, this is like the talent show or something.
No, but I mean... No,
the first one was just that guy's song, okay. Jason Becker's Ear.
Uh-huh.
So then the following year, I entered the high school talent contest on my own, and I did a mashup of Beethoven's Fifth and Yngwie Malmsteen's Icarus's Dream Suite. And I tied for first with the most popular girl in the school who did some jazz dance routine. So that tells you how good that was if I tied with the most popular girl for doing a dumb dance.
Nice, you're
thing.
Like Napoleon Dynamite.
Is that what happened? In that I just remember Uncle Rico, who could have won state if they put him in.
So you get out of high school, you're going to college. Did you go to college for music?
Yeah, I went to college for music and video business was the course at the time.
Where'd you go to school?
The Art Institute of Dallas.
Oh, okay.
So I went there, and like I said, I've always been a writer, and now I've had some music under my belt. And the reason why I went for music and video business is because I felt that as a musician, you're either good or you're not innately. And I don't think, like, going to Berklee School of Music, sorry, kids, really makes you a better musician, per se. It just kind of makes you a more technical musician. Doesn't help you write better songs from the heart. A lot of people didn't go to music school. They just, especially a lot of jazz musicians and blues musicians and rock musicians, they just have it. But I went for music business because I felt like this way, if I knew how the business worked, I wouldn't be one of those, like, taking advantage of stories.
Mm-hmm.
I could learn how it works and learn how to, you know, be one of the puppet masters instead of the puppets.
So was it like you had an idea of being an indie musician kind of thing, or like more of a manager? What was kind of your vision?
I wanted to see how it worked so I would know how, when I got my band together, that I would be able to know how to do it properly.
Okay.
Find any sort of back doors or whatever. So I actually dropped out of college because I think I found the back door to the industry. And that was to combine my two loves, which is writing and music. So I dropped out to start a music magazine. I was on the fence about it, but one of my college professors actually told me something that I turned into a life philosophy that has greatly worked for my success much after this, which was, I said, I want to do this music magazine, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to get any really high-quality musicians. And he said, you'd be surprised who you can get on the phone if you just try. So I've kind of taken that as a life philosophy and manipulated, changed it a little bit to be, you'd be surprised what you can accomplish if you just go for it. Hmm. So now again, I'm a little older. So the popular bands at that time is all in the 90s. So the first band that I got was Faith No More.
What was the name of your magazine?
The name of the magazine was Section 3.
Why?
Actually, honestly, because all the other cool names were taken, and I just looked through a bunch of photographs that I took, and one was of a sign in a cemetery somewhere that read Section 3, and it was a cool-looking sign. It says, Section 3! No one's using that name.
Yeah.
And it's true. And it doesn't have any sort of emotional meaning.
Uh-huh.
Like if I call the, I don't know, like rock gods or something like that, it would be weird. Because then, Section 3 could mean whatever.
Right. Right. You can attach anything to it.
Yeah.
So how did you get this? How did you land this interview?
Actually, I applied to be Faith No More's guitarist because they lost their guitarist, a guy with the crazy hair, their first guitarist. And I saw that they were looking for a new guitarist. So I sent in my demo tape,
mm-hmm.
and then the manager replied back saying, thanks, but they're going to hire their roadie, as if I had a shot.
Right.
So I said, all right, cool. So I already know who the manager was. And then when I dropped out of college to start my music magazine, I was like, oh, well, I already kind of know somebody. And this is kind of like the philosophy to carry, right? Is always think of how am I connected to somebody who to get me what I want or to help me to bridge the gap to get to where I want to go with whatever goal I want. So I said, well, who does he also manage? Okay, he also manages Rage Against the Machine and all these other things. So I'm like, okay, so he's a good manager as far as I was concerned. So I said, hey, I applied to be the guitarist, but now I'm starting this music magazine, blah, 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 and Faith No More is coming to Providence, Rhode Island, where I lived. And I said, can I interview them? So he just gave me the guitarist, Roddy Bottom, and that was my first big interview with him, and we ended up just walking around Providence for like 3 hours because they're bored. That's the thing with these musicians, and I don't know if this helps your people listening, but this is something I discovered, is just be real with people, understand their situation, and if you just meet them in a normal way and don't like bow down to them or don't act like you're better than anyone else, then you could develop strong relationships with people. Like all the people that I interviewed, like Gwen Stefani from No Doubt, Lisa Loeb, all these people were big at the time, Method Man from Wu-Tang Clan, now of that horrible James Corden rap battle show, and quite a few others, they would all want to maintain contact with me. A lot of them would want to maintain contact with me afterwards because a lot of them said, this is just the best interview. And even Veruca Salt, Louise Post said, oh, why don't you come down? We're going to Connecticut tomorrow. And I said, okay. So I go down there and hang out with them before the show. It was kind of like Almost Famous, but it wasn't as cool. So I was like almost famous.
So how did you, but like, what was your approach to get these other interviews? Did you use leverage of, like the first interview and then the next interview?
Yes.
Like, is that how you would do it?
That helps is once you got the first one, that obviously opens the door and say, oh, well, if someone else took a chance on you, then, and then you have product that they can listen to.
Yeah.
Then at that point, they heard that the interview was good. And my interviews were different because, interviews are boring. What are your influences? What's the next album like? Blah, blah, blah. So I got a book of 20 questions to ask people. Or no, it was a book of 100 questions to ask strangers to get to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I just grabbed up random questions out of there and just used those as my interview questions. And that's what people like so much because they were completely different than anything they had answered.
Right, right.
And then you get to really know the person. So then it becomes a good interview because mm-hmm. now no one knew Lisa Loeb went to Brown University while I am from Providence. And then I went to school in Dallas where she's from.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a cool little, oh, wow, we just totally swapped.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also find out what someone's really like. For example, with Method Man, I learned at his, I learned a lot of things. But for example, I learned that he used to go to his public pool in New York and there was all this group of kids that were all mean and everything that would like to pick on kids. Like, where do you find that in any other interview? I also found out, can't say some of this stuff.
Is it off the record?
Like I said, oh, well, Riz is a vegetarian. Are you also a vegetarian? He says, hell no, I'll eat a cow's ass. And then he told me about his grandmother, who he said it was like some non sequiturs. He's like, she can cook her ass off. She'll cook pig's feet, and it was awesome, but she had a bedpan next to her bed. Like, I don't know what that meant. But, like, you don't get this stuff in normal interviews. Coming back into it, I could say, for example, I would interview Primus, I would interview Weezer, and then I would find out a lot about, you know, what makes them tick, what they like, what they don't like. I have even interviewed an actress, Helena Bonham Carter, who was used to doing all these hoity-toity films before.
How'd you get her for a music magazine?
Well, she was coming to Boston, And some of the publicists would kind of work for music and film. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, I got some film publicity stuff. And their publicist's job, I guess this is kind of like, can correlate to your audience, where it's like, help people accomplish their job and they'll help you with whatever else you need. So a publicist's job is getting press for their clients, right? Mm-hmm. So I interviewed or covered everything because I wanted to just have content. I didn't know it was content at that point. I'm going to do air quotes, content. But back then, it's like I wanted material is what we called it. So I had so much material that I would just cover everything. So this way, then it morphed from a music magazine into an entertainment magazine, because then I would cover film, because then once some people saw that I would do some interviews with actors as well, they wanted me to review movies. So then I just kind of morphed and I said, I'll cover everything as long as it's entertainment based. Like, it wouldn't be any sports, wouldn't really fit. So for example, I interviewed Helena Bonham Carter, and everyone was asking all these, like, you know, Merchant Ivy type questions about how amazing it was to work with Kevin Branagh and all this stuff, who I guess she was married to. And I just asked her, so say, like, you come to the States and you're at Thanksgiving dinner, because they don't have Thanksgiving in England. So say, like, you come to the States, you're at Thanksgiving dinner with one of your American friends, and a cockroach comes on the table. What do you do? And everyone's like, my God. And she just said, oh, well, I'll just flick it off the table and go about my eating. So it was, like, kind of cool that she wouldn't, you know, she was just a normal person. She didn't flinch at it.
Right.
And then afterwards, she really liked the questions and everything that I would ask, because they're different. So I guess
you were definitely outside the box thinker.
Yeah, think differently, but not so outside where you are odd. Right.
You're, like, alienating.
Yeah, because you don't want to ask something really weird, like, if I was to ask her, like, what color underwear she has, that would be outside and too offensive, right?
Right.
But if you ask someone something different, just go a little bit. Just use your brain. Think creatively. If you're, especially this is a music podcast, so you think people are creative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Use that.
Right. So what happened with the magazine? What did you eventually decide to do? Did you just decide to fold it, or did you sell it, or what happened?
Yeah, so eventually, after 7 years of doing that, I got tired of the East Coast snow and blizzards, so I wanted to move to Los Angeles, where it was nice and weather was beautiful. So I said, screw it, I don't want to do this anymore, and a lot of my contacts were from the New York office, and then I'd have to get new contacts for the LA office, and then I'd have to kind of, you know, not start over, but then I still have to do the hustle while I was trying to adapt to a new location. And I'd done it for 7 years. And I just said, you know, I just don't care anymore. So I just let it die. And then also the internet was starting to blow up at that time. And I started getting a lot of work doing marketing and business development online. So it's just a matter of, like, okay, do I want to invest more money into changing this magazine into an online database and then start doing that, or do I just want to just let it die? And I just pulled the plug on it to get into work for entertainment, where I worked for Universal and another film company as well.
So what was it like kind of going from this indie project into sort of the major corporate entertainment? Because it's interesting with indie artists right now, there seems to be at least more power for the indie artist and record labels and, you know, record companies are, I mean, obviously they still have a lot of capital, but it's just, they're just not the major players. So I was just wondering if you could talk about Universal, which also has a music arm, but, like, and I know you were in the entertainment division, but if you could talk a little bit about what it was like to work for one of those big entertainment conglomerates and what you kind of thought of it.
Basically, when you work for a major studio or record company or anything like that, it's basically an office job. You know, your product is a lot more interesting than like insurance. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing. You've got cubes, you've got offices, you've got internal politics. It's just a product that you're working on every day is more interesting because it's art. Mm-hmm. But it's art packaged. It's, you know, it's a commodity. You know, it doesn't matter if you're selling insurance or you're selling DVDs or you're selling albums. It's still all marketing data. It's still demographic analysis. It's just the same boring crap. But, you know, people would complain, and I say, look, you're still working in the film industry or in some cases the music industry. So you could have an office job in construction or in insurance or whatever. So at least you're in entertainment where at least the product's interesting.
So what was your kind of observations about that, though, treating, you know, something that's created by a person as a product, as a commodity? Like, what was takeaway from that? Did it kind of make you cynical about, or did it make you, like, just kind of smarter about the business, like looking at it as a commodity or a product, or like what was that?
I think there's a reality that a lot of artists don't get, where it's like if you want to be the artiste and you want to be an artist and you want your creativity to be all about you and you want to be the respected genius, then you're really one in a billion if you ever make it. Mm-hmm. There's only one, and like even look at some people like Basquiat, you know, who like some people say he's so brilliant. In his time, he was never really rich, and he died young. Then there's other musicians that really get to express themselves, and maybe they blow up, maybe they don't. But some of the true artists, like, for example, I think you could look at Bjork as one of the people who are completely 100% whatever she wants to do, true to herself, and she found her niche. After she was commercial to a certain degree, right? Then you have a band like Pearl Jam that was like so depressed that they were popular and didn't want to do music videos, but it's like no one signed you to, no one forced you to sign the contract. No one forced you to join up with the major label. You did because you wanted the money, because you wanted the support, you wanted to be pushed, you wanted your art to be out there, and you wanted this company to push you in front of millions and millions of people because you felt that you deserved it because you were brilliant. So there's a give and take. They also need to sell records, or it's not a charity, right? It's a business. So you kind of have to know that if you're going to play in that game on the major label or major film company scale, then you have to kind of give to get. There's like, you know, or otherwise stay indie. You know, stay indie, do the Ani DeFranco thing and just say, screw it. I'm not even interested. I'm going to do my thing on my label, and I'm going to work my ass off. And she's obviously, again, one in 7 billion because no one's been like her. She just worked her ass off and had a good product too and had the perfect image for the right time, and she just was like, it'll never happen again. But she was 100% indie. You know, even Pearl Jam now that they kind of went against the whole major label thing very early, they're still doing their thing now, very successful, have their following. Of course, they benefited from being on a major label. And then you have the Bjorks of the world who kind of just keep evolving and be whatever they're interested in, and now they still have their little niche following, which is great.
So you were at Universal, and then what made you kind of make the leap into starting your own marketing agency? Like, what was that? Did you get burnt out, or what was the kind of pivot in that direction? What motivated that?
Obviously, I had kind of been a self-starter, so to speak, entrepreneurial spirit, by starting my own music magazine, dropping out of college, just self-teaching myself writing and guitar and everything. It's kind of like I'd march to the beat of my own drum, right? So working in this corporate environment with the politics was just like, it's just too much. Can I swear on this? It's too much bullshit for me to want to deal with, because I just want to do my thing, and I just want to, you know. So again, if you want to work for the majors or play with the majors, you have to give and take. You have to play the game. I don't want to play the game. I want to play my game. So I said, screw this. I've got all this internet experience, this marketing experience. I know that what I can do. I know I'm a hard worker. I know I'm creatively talented. I know I've got all this stuff. that I can parlay into my own business. So I said, and this was also in the middle of the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. I got laid off from the second film company. Then I co-produced something for a director. And then after that, I was like, okay, what do I do now for mm-hmm. a year and a half? Mm-hmm. And then it was the Great Recession, so I couldn't find another job. And I said, screw it. I'm going to hire myself and start a company and work my ass off again.
Nice.
And I did. And 7 years later, I just started my third company 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
So look at that.
So I think that your experience could really benefit a lot of artists and indie artists and even just people that want to navigate the music industry, because it literally is a landscape that's changing on a daily basis, you know, and there's sort of, it's kind of the Wild West all over again. So I wonder if you can talk about thinking of yourself as a business and also, you know, marketing, branding advice that you would share with somebody that wants to go the indie route, that really wants to market and promote themselves as a product, as an entity, et cetera.
Yeah. So basically your community, your following, traffic, all of that stuff is your gold. You have to find a way to capture whatever traffic happens to fall into your little web, and not the World Wide Web, but your little corner of the world. Simple little things, like if you have a website, put in some capturing code on it. Put a Facebook pixel on your website. There's easy instructions on how to copy and paste that. Put up some Google remarketing tracking code. Put any sort of code that will capture the traffic of your website and many other kind of services that you have your own profile page. Some of them may allow you to put tracking codes on there. And wherever you can put your tracking codes, put it. Because that means anyone who comes to your page is going to get cookied. And once they get cookied, then you'll be able to market to them in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Because they might never ever come back again. They might have said, oh yeah, I forgot who that musician was, but that was some pretty cool track. And then you lost them forever. But now with the power of like modern marketing, you can capture them and then market to them for like up to 180 days or a year later. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Obviously, we got to talk about how do you get awareness in the first place. So it's all about YouTube, social media, Facebook ads. I would say Facebook ads are incredibly intricate these days. Everyone's on Facebook, even the kids, even though they say that they hate it and they love Snapchat. But everyone's on Facebook, say 90% of the world, it seems. So you can super target people. You can target people by what they like, how old they are, where they live, any number of things. You don't have to spend like $5 million to target everyone in the world. Target a very, very small, specific group of people that you think will like your music. For example, if you play rock and roll and you play indie rock and you kind of have a gritty voice and you're angst-ridden, you might want to target Nirvana fans, for example. Maybe, depending on your style, you want to target bands or artists that are as close to you as possible. And then you send off like even $20 in ads. Don't boost posts. That's a waste of money. Send people directly to your website or your SoundCloud or wherever you're at. That will allow a tracking code. If it won't allow a tracking code, then don't send them there. Because you want to be able to get something back from your marketing effort, right? So you can embed your SoundCloud on a website. You can get a free website, you know, from like, I don't know.
Wix, one of these.
If you're a real business, I would never suggest getting a free website. But as a musician who's like starving and starting out, then absolutely get a freebie. Embed your SoundCloud on there so that this way you can put your tracking code and then people can hear your music at the same time. And now you can remarket to them over and over again. So then you don't ever lose traffic that comes into your world. Make your, with Facebook, I would say give them a tease. Do some video ads. They're a little expensive, but do some video ads that have a clip of you playing, especially your best song, your best part of your best song. So the hook of your best song that they can hear when they click and go to your website, give a little sample of that and say, hear more at boom, and make them click. And then go to your website and hear more. Or if you have an album to sell or something like that, say, hear more, buy it now, something like that, and then target them. and get them into your world, and then build your community, interact with your community, engage with them. If anyone reaches out to you at all on social media, always be positive. Even if someone says you suck, say thanks. You know, music's not for everyone. You know, never get into a war with someone, because then people won't remember who started it or who was the director. Just remember, wow, this is really negative, and that's not gonna make people like you. Unless you're some emo, angst-ridden anti-hero, you know.
Can I ask about when you say the tracking codes? Like, what information does that give you? Sort of a demographic of who, what type of person is checking out your music, or how does that work?
In an indirect way, it lets you do that. For example, let's say you get 1,000 visitors to your website. 900 of them are on Facebook, and you put a Facebook pixel on your website. So now, now you have a custom audience, is what it's called. You have a custom audience of web traffic of 900 Facebook users that have went to your website and liked, or at least just, they must have liked your ad if they ended up on your website. So now you have 900 people that you can market to. Now you can send them different types of ads. You know that if these people already came to my website, I don't have to send them a sampler anymore. Now I can tell them whether they can buy what they hopefully liked. And then maybe you can sell like 50 to 100, you know, downloads off of that. Because you're not going to sell 100%. But if you could sell anywhere from 2 to 5%, you're doing good. Now it's just a matter of, and as an aside, if you can sell a few things to strangers, then you can sell a few hundred or a few thousand things to strangers. It's always trying to make sure that you have something that people want to buy that aren't your friends or family or related to you or anything like that, or dating you. If you can get strangers to buy your product, then it's just a matter of, okay, that's the good start. Now, how do I get more strangers to buy my product? And the answer to that, coming back to the point, is lookalike audiences. Once you have a custom audience built up of people that you know like your music, in some cases it would be like, in other businesses it would be a customer list of people who have purchased something, yada yada yada. So once you have this list of, say, 900 people that you know have visited your website, and you have a custom audience, you could build a lookalike audience off of that. And now
that's what, like, demographics, is that what you mean?
It could target it. What it does is it looks at the demographics, psychographics, what people like, what age groups they are. And the theory there is that if these people like your stuff in this custom audience, if these people are your customers or like your stuff or your prospects, then people very similar to them in interest and age and demographics and psychographics will probably also like your stuff that haven't heard you. So make sure that your advertising hits, because you can't waste money, because musicians, especially non-signed one, don't have a lot of money.
Right.
So you have to be super, super efficient with your ad spends when you're doing this stuff. So you hit strangers with, like, maybe a sample, listen more. Make sure they hear a sample so that when they click, you know that they already like what they hear.
Right.
Because you don't want someone who likes death metal to click and listen to Debbie Gibson. Or maybe you do. That'd be, you know, but you don't want to waste that money, because now you're paying for that traffic, so don't waste your money.
Yeah.
So give them a little sample. If they like the hook, they like the song, then they are more likely to be good prospects for you. So then your lookalike audience, they also don't know you now. So they're not the same people. So they don't know you. So maybe you want to hit them with the same sample ad, while the people that have already gone to your website, you want to hit them with a different ad, because they already know who you are now. So think about the end recipient of and how you're reaching them based on their experience with you, as much as you know. And then you can call that, like, a, some people call it a funnel, but in our particular case, let's call it steps, right? Step one is that they have to be aware of your product.
Right.
So let's give them a sample, because then step two is they have to be interested in the product. So let's give them a sample of your best hook. And then step three is now you want them to take an action to convert in some way, either purchase a download or come to a show or refer to someone else or come back again, depending on what it is. So when you have these steps, you have to know that the next person, where are they in this funnel? Where are they in this little ladder? So if these new people are at step one, give them the step one ad that worked, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. now when they come to your website, the lookalike people, they now are added to the 900 people who have already visited your website.
Right.
So now your 900 super awesome list of people that have heard your music starts to grow.
Right.
Now you can hit them with, I got a new song, I've got a new single, I've got a new album, I'm going to be in your area. Because here's another thing you can do as a musician, if you ever do like your own tour, or if you know that you're in one area, you could take this audience and you can segment down to just the people that are in your area. You can also say, okay, well, these, let's say it's Los Angeles. Los Angeles is huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I'm going to play at the Troubadour. Well, someone in maybe Inland Empire might not go see your show.
Mm-hmm.
But people in Hollywood and West Hollywood and maybe even the West Side would. So you can just do an ad when you get enough people, of course, just for those people
right.
around that area, and incentivize them to come check out your show, make them aware of it.
Okay. So, because we're running out of time, Oops. So I want to make sure.
Sorry, I just want to give a bunch of information.
No, it was great. It was really, really good, and especially, too, for people to think much more strategically. You know, this is, like, gone are the days of, like, stapling a flyer to a telephone pole, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but it's excellent because, again, you can really micro-target the audience that actually really, really wants to see you and could be like an ongoing fan base.
Mm.
Just to wrap up, do you have any other advice for artists that want to, you know, expand their brand, who want to, you know, get their story out there?
Yeah, I can end on one little extra thing. Everything I've already said, obviously gold stuff, people pay for this. but the last thing is the power of story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of musicians out there, they're all kind of sound the same. Yeah, I'm sorry, you probably sound like someone else. Sorry, it's just the way it is, right? And
harsh,
it's not a bad
way
thing.
Way harsh, Ty.
I know, right? But it's not a bad thing, because then you know your niche. You know who else will like you.
Mm-hmm.
But why are you different? You know, what is it in your life? What is it in your story? Craft your story of who you are. And it's not just like, yeah, I've had a rough upbringing, and, you know, that's everyone's story. Like, what is unique about you that's truly different? And think of yourself from outside of yourself. A lot of people, you know, they love their dog because it's their dog, and they think their child is beautiful because it's their child. Well, try to think of what someone else thinks of your music or your brand. Like, that's the hardest thing in anything, whether it's business, art, anything. Think of, if you could think and say, as a complete stranger, why would I be interested in me? Not because I'm so amazing and great because I'm me, but what is about you? Is it, what about your story is different, or at least a slightly different take than someone else's
mm-hmm.
story?
Mm-hmm.
And make that and keep working on that and think about your brand, your image, your story, how you're going to communicate, what your songs really mean. Do you have an ultimate goal with your music to reach a certain type of people? And then think of all of that stuff and put it all together, and then your brand will start to become unique as it evolves,
mm-hmm.
as
mm-hmm.
you keep at it.
Great. And then finally, what do you have coming down the pike for yourself as you continue your global domination?
Well, my marketing company is still growing, thank God. Knock on wood, knock, mm-hmm. knock, knock. And then the new company markets mobile app marketers. Basically, it's an event company to help mobile app marketers learn how to grow their apps. So we're going to launch that in early 2018 and, you know, dominate the world of mobile app marketing, get everyone in there. So if anyone's interested in checking out some of the awesome stuff and looking at pictures of an amazing English bulldog, you can go to circlemarketing.com. Yeah, if you want to send an email and ask any questions, I'll be happy to answer any questions you have about, hey, here's my website, what do you think? And I'll tell you what I think.
He'll be brutally honest. That's that East Coast.
Yeah.
Well, sound like it is.
Well, if you suck, you want to know how to fix it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want me to say, oh my God, sounds great, keep living the dream. And then you're like, this guy sucks. He told me to keep living my dream. I'm homeless.
Well, on that note.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Louis. Really appreciate it. I think there were some real pearls of wisdom that a lot of people can benefit from. So thank you again.
Thank you.
I think we're all just living the dream out here in sunny, hey, how'd you get that music job podcast land, right? Thanks again, Louis Tange. Again, you can reach him at circlemarketing.com, CircleMarketing.com. And yeah, go ahead, shoot him an email. He said you could, so fire away. But again, I hope you got a lot of good marketing and advertising strategy and all about tracking codes and all of that other really good stuff about how to get your brand out there, how to get your story out there, how to shape and tell your story as an indie artist musician. So that ends episode 8. I can't believe it already. We're again at musicjobspodcast.com, musicjobswithanspodcast.com. Please like, share, tell your friends, tell your family around the Thanksgiving table. Maybe it will keep them fighting about politics for 5 seconds. I am El Ariel. You can find me and my musical mutterings at lariel music.com. That's lariel music.com. So again, keep on hustling, pursue that dream. Don't give up.